Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, are the airlines secretly selling your flight information to the government? And JetBlue has a unique flying challenge that will get you elite status in their frequent flyer program for 25 years. Those stories and more next in the travel news.
Our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:20 takes a look at red flags that you should pay attention to when booking your hotel. Things like pictures online, name changes, and a host of things that may be telling you to make a different hotel choice.
The Washington Post, generally one of America's best-written newspapers, has a list this week of the top 50 airports in the country. We'll tell you where Sacramento ranks on the list at 11:35. Advanced tease, Sacramento's ranking is more than a little surprising.
It's been a dozen years since the poop cruise for Carnival. Remember the Carnival Triumph floating in the Gulf of Mexico without power? Now there's a Netflix documentary all about it. And at 11:50, we'll take you back in time and help you flush the whole story out of your system.
There's no poop in our program. Just great information to make you smarter the next time you hit the road. Thanks for tuning in to The Travel Guys.
Thanks for coming along live. It's about 5 after 11. The weather is going to be another hot one. Don't forget now, you can go to TravelGuysRadio.com for links to our stories and so much more right there at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark, good to see you. How have you been?
I'm good. You know, you just did something that nobody ever does on the radio anymore. That used to be...
I know.
You gave the time.
I know.
And I thought to myself, gosh, when was the last time I heard somebody... Because, you know, on the radio, that was always the big thing. You know, time and temperature, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I flashed back there on you. I've been good. We took a group of Sports Leisure travelers to a destination. I just steal a minute here at the top of the program and tell folks a little bit about it. We went to Hood River, Oregon, was our gateway, our headquarters for 4 nights. And Hood River is about 45 minutes, an hour east of Portland on the Oregon side of the Columbia River. So it's close to a whole lot of things, and yet it's outside of the city. And Hood River is just a wonderful little community. We have a Best Western hotel. We stay there. It's a Best Western Plus, so it's kind of one of their upper echelon hotels. It's right on the river. We get the rooms that overlook, that have the view of the Columbia River. So in the evenings, folks can go back. And, of course, it doesn't get dark at this time of night until 9:30 up in Portland. So it's really neat. We went to Mount St. Helens. And the weather was kind to us. You can go up. It's about a 2.5-hour drive from Hood River, so an hour and half hour and 45 minutes out of Portland. You can go up. There's a visitor center, and you can't get all the way to the end of the road because there's been a rock slide last year. But you can get to where, if the weather cooperates, there's some beautiful views of the mountain. There's a national park and a private visitor center on the way up, so you can learn about the mountain and the whole story about how it blew up. Some of us older folks remember all of that leading up to it. And the old guy up on the mountain, Harry Truman was his name. he was the guy who ran the campground at Spirit Lake, and who said, when they asked him if he was going to leave, he said, I'm not going to leave here. They said this mountain's going to blow up. They've been saying that for years. And so Harry's still there somewhere, and his campground's under about 300 foot of water and ash that went down. Spirit Lake is a lot bigger than it used to be. But we went up on Mount Hood. We rode the train that's there in the Hood River Valley. We took a cruise in downtown Portland with the Portland Spirit folks, a lovely lunch cruise when we got up there. So we did some – that's a great area. You know, the Pacific Northwest at this time of the year, goodness, it's like 10 to 20 degrees cooler than us. You're going to have some people up there with you, though, and prices are not cheap because everybody knows what I just said, that it's a great place to go this time of the year. But there are a lot of little hidden gems in Oregon and Washington, and down the road maybe we'll do a segment one day about just cool places to go in those two states that most people don't know about. But anyway, we had a wonderful time with nice people, good food, went to the Columbia Gorge Hotel for dinner one night. That was all fancy. That's a beautiful old historical property right along the river there. So thanks to all of the people who made Sports Leisure Vacations their choice, and for being such great company on a 5-day trip up to Hood River, Oregon. Great place to visit.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, well, I had a sports leisure vacation experience to a Giants game, and we'll talk about that in about a half an hour. It was, I'll save it. By the way, Mark, do you remember when we did a complete show with several segments all about Portland and Oregon? It was, we talked to the people about the Rose Parade and so much more. We have to dig that one out.
That was just a few years ago, I think.
Yeah, it was. All right, my friends, we are the Travel Guys, and at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date on the travel news.
TSA has announced that they will be banning any alcohol over 140 proof. So, you know, you already have that 4-ounce limit.
That's rubbing alcohol, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you can bring one. You can bring liquor miniatures on the plane, and of course, as you know, they're always telling you, you know, you can't drink your own alcohol. And basically the reason for that is because they want to be able to have some control over how much alcohol you consume on the plane so that if you get out of, you know, they can keep you from getting out of control. Anyway, TSA will not let you through alcoholic beverages with more than 70% alcohol over 140 proof, including grain alcohol and 151 proof rum are not being allowed through security. So if you've got properly labeled alcohol that exceeds that, figure out a way to put it in your bag because they're not going to let it on board, or take the label off so that it creates some kind of a challenge to figure out. You didn't hear that from me. In Hawaii, lawmakers are calling for the resignation of the tourism board. Now, in a lot of places, tourism board wouldn't be that big of a deal. But in places like California or Hawaii, where tourism is a huge part of the economy, then this is a big deal. And these folks, in some cases, are political appointees. In some cases, are appointed based on their knowledge and experience in the industry. But when tourism is a big part of the economy, what these folks do and the decisions they make and what their experience is and how committed they are is really important. And in Hawaii, they have decided that some of the folks have been there way too long and are way too beholden to certain parts of the industry. And so the governor has suggested that they should all resign. And like I said, in Hawaii, this is a little bit of a big deal because the tourism people, almost everything in the islands evolves around tourism. So all the jobs, all the economy, all the everything, almost everything is completely tied to tourism. So the people who make those decisions are kind of important. Is the government secretly selling passenger data to, are the airlines secretly selling passenger data to the government, is the headline from Ben Schlopig's website, 1 Mile at a Time. I guess at this point, Tom, you kind of feel like that probably nothing is sacred. I mean,
yeah, everybody's got my personal information. I don't know anybody left that could possibly want it. I'm not sure.
Exactly. What would you like to know about me that, you know, I don't have that many secrets, so I'm not too
pretty much
I'm too terribly concerned about it. But for those of you who do, anyway, this story is about the fact that it turns out that Airline Reporting Corporation, which is owned by several large airlines, that's where travel agents and the like report their airline ticket sales every week and settle up their account. So this is the group that kind of facilitates all that. As it turns out, the company is also selling passenger data to Customs and Border Protection. The contract between the Airline Reporting Corporation and CBP, Customs and Border Protection, specifically stipulates that the government can't admit where it got that data. There are reportedly around 1 billion records by name, credit card, airline, and applies to roughly 39 months of travel history plus upcoming bookings. This is kind of interesting. One interesting quirk is that the data captured is limited to bookings made through travel agencies and not those made directly online with airlines.
Mm-hmm. What does that tell you?
Well, yeah, I don't know. This is just one story from one source. But we'll kind of keep an eye on this and see. Like I said, I'm not sure that my expectation was any different than the fact that the airlines already had, that the government knew everything about me that they wanted to know, or at least could find it out fairly easily. Here's a couple of Amtrak stories for you. It's kind of fluff, but it's fun if you like riding the train. One of the most scenic Amtrak routes in the United States is getting a new look, and train cars with panoramic windows, the Cascade train, which runs in Oregon and Washington, and once a day goes on up to Vancouver, is getting all beautiful. God, there's some pictures of them online, and they're getting all brand new cars with panoramic windows. And we were just talking about the Pacific Northwest, and yeah, it's pretty scenic up there. In the wintertime, it's kind of snowy. In the summertime, it's kind of green. And so, yes, that wouldn't be a bad. And guess what? There's an airline that flies nonstop once a day from Sacramento to Eugene. So you could get there on Southwest, and you could get home from Vancouver nonstop on Air Canada. Welcome to Sacramento. We grew up over the last 40 or 50 years. Here's another Amtrak story. Phoenix to Tucson passenger train, which used to exist many years ago in Arizona. It looks like it might be coming back. So you might be able to go to Phoenix, and you could hop on a train in a couple of 3 hours. You could be in Tucson, spend the day, spend the night, come back to Phoenix. Seems like it would be a reasonably popular service. And finally, last story for today, JetBlue will give you 25 years of status for completing this challenge. The airline launched a 25 for 25 challenge. Mm-hmm. Here is an opportunity to get elite status on the airline for 25 years. All you have to do is complete 25 trips to 25 different airports in the JetBlue system. And you have to do this. Let's see. All travel has to take place between June 25th and December 31st. So you have roughly 6 months to do this. In New York City, where they fly from more than one airport, each airport counts. So if you flew into Newark and the next time flew into LaGuardia and the next time flew into Kennedy, why, those would all count. JetBlue, of course, serves Boston and New York with a red-eye flight every night that comes to Sacramento in the evening and turns around and goes back to New York and Boston as a red-eye, which is our only nonstop service to New York. We have a United red-eye that comes in from Newark every night. So anyway, if you are really an air geek, Tom, I'll bet you there will be people who will do this.
Sure. Well, tell me again, what is it that you get?
You get loyalty. You get loyalty status. You get long in for 25 years in their program. Wow. And does it say here? This release doesn't say. I'm hoping this would be top tier status. If that were the case, then that would be really interesting. If it's just we put you on the bottom tier, then maybe not so much. But because 25 airports, and you got 6 months. That's basically an airport a week. So
you could do that.
But I mean, you'd have to be out there, and what you wouldn't want to fly back to your home airport because that wouldn't help you. You'd want to fly to New York and then fly to Fort Lauderdale and then fly to somewhere else. And then, you'd want to keep working your way around the system so that every flight counted towards your 25. Anyway,
wow, that's crazy talk. That definitely sounds like a Mark thing.
Yeah, except that I don't have the time.
I know.
The time to do that. But anyway, this is it's an interesting thing from JetBlue for geeks.
Yeah, 1 mile at a time, Ben Schlopik. I bet you he does this.
And that is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. Don't forget, check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. And you have, 3 days left to check out the Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House special for the month of June. So that's, like I say, up and through Monday. They're offering you a petite filet and petite lobster for $34.95, including fresh asparagus and San Francisco sourdough bread. Available at lunch through the Tuesday through Friday, and, of course, dinner every night. As Mark often will remind us, that Rudy's isn't cheap. Not the most expensive, but this is an opportunity to really take advantage of a very, very affordable meal. In fact, this would be a meal that you more than likely can take home and have leftovers. That's, once again, petite filet and lobster, $34.95 through the end of June. So get out there and enjoy it.
Rudy's Hideaway, the triple yummy rating from the Travel Guys.
All right. Just off of Highway 50 at Hazel. Coming up next on the Travel Guys, our Smarter Travelers segment.
This is a list of 16 hotel booking red flags. I'm not going to mention all of them, but you can see the complete list at travelguysradio.com on our list of highlights from today's program. So here are just a few. Many of us book hotels now by going online, especially hotels where we haven't stayed before, maybe a city we haven't been in. So you're looking at a hotel online and you're clicking along and you're looking at the photos and stuff. Remember that it's really easy to Photoshop pictures or to use generic or stock photos or photos of really pretty people standing there in front of really pretty scenes, which were not taken anywhere near the hotel.
Well, they can't do that.
Well, yeah, they sort of can. And, okay. And it's a real popular thing to do. So look at those photos fairly carefully. You're looking for maybe like a brand name sign in the background or something that tells you that these people are actually in the lobby of a Marriott or a Hilton or a Hyatt hotel or whatever it is. Anyway, photos are one thing to look for. Location descriptions that don't match maps. Hotels love to tell you that, oh, we're right in the middle of, we're centrally located, we're near museums and shops, attractions, you can walk to everything. Well, that may depend on how good a walker you are. Two blocks is a lot different from a mile, which is a lot different from 2 miles. And so you've booked a hotel thinking that, well, you know, I don't need a rental car or anything like that. We've got shops and restaurants and attractions right outside of our door, except that, yeah, they're right outside your door, except there's a 12-lane freeway between you and all of that stuff and no way to get there. So make sure that if you're booking a hotel specifically for its location, do your fact-checking homework, pull them up on your own GPS, on your phone, and make sure that indeed they are close to and accessible to those things that they tell you that they are.
Yeah, boy, I do that every time. You know, it's just the old phrase, just off the strip.
Mm-hmm.
Or centrally located.
Centrally located, yeah.
Close to everything. Yeah, no, the best thing is really, I mean, you can look at their maps, but just get out your phone, get your Google Map out, put your address there, put the address, then expand it out and take a look, and boy, will you be surprised.
Near Times Square. That's one of the real popular ones in New York City. And Times Square is, you know, up 42nd, 43rd, 44th, 45th Street. And I've seen hotels that are as much as 20 blocks away advertised that they're or accessible to Times Square. That's because they're next to a subway stop. And really, they're 4 miles from Times Square, but nonetheless, it's easily accessible. So just that's a good place to do your homework. And sometimes if you see a hotel that's, you know, using Times Square as an example, you know, my group stay at the Marriott at Times Square. We've stayed there a long time. We get great rates because we've been a loyal customer for a long time, probably much better rates than are available to the public. But still, if you went to a Times Square hotel, you'd expect to pay probably $400 a night. Maybe a little, maybe more if it was during a special event. So if you go to a Times Square hotel and it's $159, it's either not in Times Square or it's not someplace that you want to stay. So that's pricing sometimes can be an indicator also, especially if it's really, really, really weird. Even most hotels have some sort of social media presence. So if you go to your hotel's website or their social media spot and nothing has been posted there for 3 years, that would be a very bad sign. Also, reviews. Reviews can be easily faked. You can set a hotel employee in a room for a day and say, you know, create 40 reviews to put on our website and talk about this and this and this. So when you look at reviews on a hotel website, you're looking for specifics to somebody, and also really look for complaints. And how did the hotel respond to the complaints? Did they just blow it off? Nobody reads this. Nobody really cares. Or did they come back and try to make it right with the customer? What did they do when a customer wasn't happy with them? And how often did that sort of situation come up? So those are just a few things. You can go to travelguysradio.com and take a look there at the entire list of tips from our friends at Travelers United that may help you the next time that you are picking a hotel.
There you go. Good advice. Do your homework.
Yeah, no substitute for that.
Yeah, don't get sucked in. Well, speaking of sports leisure vacations, we talked a week or so ago about bus trips to ball games, which sports leisure has been doing for 47 years plus. I had a chance to enjoy a trip to the San Francisco Giants game this past Thursday. It was the Giants and the Marlins. Unfortunately, the game didn't turn out that well. But you know, Mark, when you take a trip to the game there, especially if you don't go often, there is so much to see. It is just kind of overwhelming. I mean, it's hard to keep your eye on the game, looking at the beautiful scenery and all. As we mentioned, you have these great seats in what is called the club area. Now, the club level. Now, the club level is kind of like swanky almost. You know what I mean? First of all, it has its own entrance. When we got off the bus, we went right up the elevator and stepped out, and we're, you know, just a very, very short walk to our seats. And the club level, a lot of it is indoors, where all the the food vendors are and the restrooms. So, and it's air conditioned. So if you want to get out of the heat, you can step up into the club level. And if it's really cold outside, you can step into the club level and warm up a little bit. But they were fabulous seats, a fabulous trip. I have to thank Maureen, our guide. She did a great job. Boy, she too many donuts on a sports leisure vacation trip. You know, the thing I was most impressed about is your bus. Their buses are brand new, at least this one was. And the windows on that bus are enormous. I know they have a special name for them, viewing windows or whatever. But to be able to sit and just kind of look at the scenery between Sacramento and San Francisco and crossing the bridge and all that you can see is pretty spectacular and is really, really a special way to go. You kind of feel like you're a high roller. The only difference is it doesn't cost you that much.
Well, and you know, you talked about it. It's you're sitting on a bus. The traffic between Sacramento and San Francisco now is consistently pretty awful. What used to be a 2 hour ride is now pretty consistently a 2.5 to 3 hour ride. Which is, people would say, you know, not that pleasant from a bus, but if you're driving your own car, even less pleasant. So at least on a motor coach, you can sit back and relax and let somebody else worry about the traffic and all that. Yeah, the seats on that club level, Tom, you have to have a ticket to be able to get up there. And so not every Tom, Dick, and Harpo can get up there, which the advantage to that, as you mentioned, is the concession lines, the restroom lines, just the general number of people that you have to fight to get to services within the ballpark are a lot less. I don't know why it took me 24 years to find those seats, but it did. And they're not, in some cases, not that much more expensive than the lower level, and they offer great views. Anyways, enough of that. Thank you for your comments there on the ball game. The only thing I have to say, dude, is you didn't win one. We scored five runs, which is a lot for the Giants, and you didn't get us a win.
I know. We were pretty excited there. It started out slow, and the Giants got the five back and tied the game at 5-5. And all of a sudden, the energy just came back up, but didn't last long.
The Giants called and asked that, you know, you not be allowed to attend future games because it could be that you had something to do with it.
Yeah, I can believe
so
that.
We have here the 50 best airports in America ranked. This is the Washington Post that did this. And they, of course, had some methodology for what they did. They asked people for votes, and then they took the top vote getters and tried to do some analysis and go back. They wanted airports that are easy to navigate or easy to get to, that had food and shopping, that had on-time flights, that had a lot of space for people to be able to move around in. And so I got this list and I thought, you know, this is going to be cool. Sacramento's going to probably rank very well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of the things you just said just sounds like they were talking about Sacramento International.
You'd think so. So here are the top 10, they say, of the 50 best airports in the country. Their 10th one is Detroit. Wow. If I were making a 10 worst, I've only been in Detroit once recently, and that was last month. If I were making a 10 worst, Detroit would be on it. Disorganized, didn't make any sense. So that's their 10. Their 9 is Salt Lake City. Not a bad airport. It's kind of overgrown itself a little bit. That's a hub for Delta and has been for many years. So I don't have a lot of gripe with that. Number 8 is Indianapolis. That's an American Airlines airport, and so I can't comment there. I don't fly American. It's a sucky airline. It's number 7. Well, you know, you didn't ask. So I told
now,
you.
Yeah, I know. Now tell us how you really feel.
Exactly. Number 7 is Albuquerque, which I won't argue with. Albuquerque has one of the prettiest airports in the country. There's a lot of turquoise and a lot of sandstone, and it's really quite pretty. 6 is Rhode Island, which is, I haven't been there for a long time. It's a smaller New England airport. I don't have any specific memories. This is kind of interesting. Number five, Seattle's alternate airport, Payne Field, which is where a lot of Boeing planes are produced. It's north of the city, away from the main airport, and they have started. Alaska Airlines has been, and Frontier is also flying out of there to a variety of destinations. So knowing how awful the Seattle airport is, it seems like they've been having construction there for like forever. It's like an ongoing project. So anything in Seattle would be a plus. Minneapolis St. Paul, which is another Delta hub, is number 4. I haven't been in that airport for a while, so hard for me to comment on.
Drum roll, please, for Sacramento.
We'll get to that one in just a second here. DCA, I mean, they're talking about National Airport in Washington being number 3. Really hard to get to. And the only alternative is Dulles, which is like an hour out of town and a major inconvenience. But it could take you an extra hour to get into or get out of National Airport in downtown Washington. So I don't know, I'd put that on my top 10. Long Beach in Southern California. For many years after Burbank got incredibly overcrowded, Long Beach was the place to fly into. If you didn't want to deal with LAX or you didn't want to deal with Orange County, then you could go into Long Beach. Yes, Long Beach.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that's what they say is, okay. You know,
tiny.
Well, that's the whole point. And their number 1 airport is the one I just came from the other day on this list, is Portland. And I can't disagree with that too much. They've done a lot of work in Portland. They've made it like going to the airport is like walking through a forest.
Yeah.
And a lot of high ceilings, a lot of space. They're not completely done yet, but it's really is a really, really beautiful airport.
They still got live musicians playing in the airport with their acoustic guitars kind of scattered all over the place.
They do. And the foodstuffs there are places that are, and the places to shop are places that are famous in Portland. You know, Voodoo Donuts and what's the bookstore up there that has suddenly left my mind? It'll come back to me in a minute, but famous bookstore in downtown Portland. Some of the people who are listening to the program right now are screaming at the radio trying to tell me, except I can't hear them. So anyway, that's the top 10 airports in the country. And then they go on from there, Tampa, Milwaukee, Ontario, John Wayne Airport, Hollywood Burbank. You know, that used to be like the best kept secret in the country. That is the hardest to get to, most overcrowded, no waiting areas, no place to eat, no place to shop, no place to pee, no place to do anything. How in the world could Burbank make number 14 on this list of the 50 best airports in the country? There are other California airports here. Sonoma is number 25. San Francisco, for God's sake, is number 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are a lot of California airports on here. Palm Springs, which is, I mean, they have an old terminal that's really overcrowded and a new one that's off to the side that is already really overcrowded. So how in the world that made this list? I don't understand.
And Sacramento was?
And Sacramento was, we can now reveal, this list of 50 airports, the best 50 top airports in the country, these idiots compiled. Sacramento is nowhere to be found on the list. nowhere to be found. Number 50 is Boise, for God's sake. Number 49 is LaGuardia, which, you know, they've done a lot of work at LaGuardia, and it's a much nicer airport than it used to be, but it's still a monstrosity. I guess what worked must have worked against us in Sacramento is that the two terminals are not connected. But, you know, how many people fly into town on United and fly out of town on Southwest? I mean, it just doesn't happen. So there's not, other than people who work at the airport, there isn't too much reason to go between terminals. I think the new terminal is very spacious, has lots of room. All the gates aren't even being used yet. The old terminal has been completely redone. The restrooms in there are some of the nicest airport restrooms anywhere in the country. I guess there's a little bit of a lack of, there aren't as many food choices, especially really early in the morning. So that would probably work against them. I think we have a really nice airport. We're 15, 20 minutes from town, but lots of airports now are 15, 20 minutes from downtown. I'm just confused and a little bit aggravated.
Yeah, you think it has anything to do with the fact that we don't have a large contingency of international flights?
I'm sure it does. And also another one of their methodology things here is how accessible is your airport by public transit? And so Sacramento's airport is almost completely inaccessible by public transit. The Yolo bus that goes out there that runs from downtown and from Davis and the like in two different directions. So I'm sure, I guess when I think about it, maybe there are things here that the parking situation isn't good. But gosh, I go to airports all over the country all the time. And Sacramento is one of the easiest airports to get into and get out of anywhere. I'm confused. Anyway, Sacramento entirely missing from the top 50 airports in the country, according to these three yahoos at Washington Post and their methodology. I can't post the article for you to look at because the Washington Post is a subscription model. So you cannot see this unless you went to the internet and asked for top 50 airports and maybe you get a free look at the article. Anyways, I'll just sit here and be pissed off.
By the way, I looked it up. Powell's Books.
Powell's Books. Thank you. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
There you go. All right. We're Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys. Don't forget now, you can get replays. Or if you miss a Travel Guys radio show, you can hook up to be notified and get the podcast whenever you like at travelguysradio.com. I was scanning through my Netflix earlier this week, and I spotted something that jumped off the screen. It talked about the poop cruise with Carnival, and the documentary was coming soon. Click here for a reminder, which I did, and it's already available, and I'm anxious to see it, but not at dinner time. We're going to talk about this infamous poop cruise.
So aggravated about this list of 50 the best airports in the country and how Sacramento didn't make the Sacramento should be in the top 10, let alone the top 50. Number 14, number 17 on this list I looked at the break is Dulles Airport in Washington. For God's sake, how could you possibly, in your right mind, consider Dulles Airport to be on the top 500 airports? It's in the middle of picking nowhere. You can't get there. It costs a fortune on to take a taxi out there. It's the traffic getting out of rural Virginia into downtown D.C. The airport is all these outdated people movers that they use to move you between terminals are not efficient. The terminals are overcrowded, and they made the list? Good Lord. I'm sorry. Anyway, what were you talking about? What were you talking about here?
Yeah. Washington Post generally one of America's best written newspapers. Okay, we're something similar but different. The Poop Cruise, new Netflix documentary is you might point it out has caused the Poop Cruise to surface one more time.
Yes, from a poopy list of airports to a poopy cruise. This was in 2013. And for those of you that are new to the planet, this was a story about a Carnival Cruise Line ship that was out in the Gulf of Mexico, and which is just still known as by a few people. There were 4,200 people on the Carnival Triumph, February the 7th, 2013. So that would have been a little over 13 years ago. Netflix has a new documentary called Trainwreck, Poop Cruise. So you can, and Tom, you said it actually is already now available on the air. I haven't seen it yet.
You can, if you're a Netflix subscriber, it's available to watch as we speak.
Okay.
Yeah. With a fire in the engine room, disabled the power and the plumbing. I mean, there's a lot of things that could go bad on a cruise ship and people could probably, you know, put up with it, but
They had no rest. They had no plumbing. The toilet facilities did not work. So while without getting tremendously descriptive here, obviously there are some bathroom functions where you could pee in a cup and throw it over the railing or something like that. But there are some things where you can't do that, and the toilets were not flushing, and so it created all kinds of problems. Obviously, power outage when it's dark. Briefly, they decided to open the bar because they thought, well, that would be a good distraction from people. And oh joy, now what you have is a shipload full of really drunk people who are not behaving properly and are probably not very happy about the whole situation. This is really interesting. Carnival Cruise Lines did not participate in the documentary, you think? I mean, I would have thought somebody from Carnival at least would have come on and said, yeah, it was a really bad situation. We did our best. Here's the deal. They started to tow the ship to Mexico. And then for reasons that are not explained here, they decided that they had to go to Mobile, Alabama. And so the trip started in Galveston. It was supposed to be four nights. And so it was the third night that this happened. And so that would have been, let's see, February 7, 8, 9. And the ship didn't get to Mobile until the night of February the 14th. So 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. That's 5 days and nights. And the reason they called it the poop cruise was because with the toilets not working and stuff, a lot of things got really ugly on board. And it was, as Tom, you mentioned, something you probably don't want to watch during dinner.
Yeah. By the way, did you know what the passengers were given as a result of having to put up with this?
No.
First of all, they got their money back for their cruise,
right?
And they got a one-time $500 payment, plus a future complimentary cruise. This, even though this was horrible, and it's the kind of thing. I mean, it's so contradictory to what it is that you went there to do. Have a great time and all of that. It really kind of changed the face of the cruise industry. A lot of changes were made and put into place, which now results in perhaps no more poop cruises.
Yeah, maybe that won't happen to people again. Listen, we only have a couple minutes here. There's something that I just came up the other day. I just noticed it. Southwest didn't mention it, haha. Southwest used to be an airline that they didn't nickel and dime people, and they were just better. They were more fun, and they didn't go everywhere and do everything. They didn't have first class, but, people laughed and joked on the planes and stuff like that. It was a joy to do business with them. Maybe not quite as much anymore. And here's something that's about to change big time. You need to know this. If you buy the cheapest ticket on Southwest since the 25th of May, so let's pretend that on the 1st of July, you buy a ticket to fly during Christmas vacation, because it's not abnormal for people to buy tickets months in advance. You buy the cheapest fare on Southwest now, it's only refundable for 6 months after the date you bought the ticket. So the clock starts ticking on that 6 month, be able to spend it on something else the day you buy it. If you buy the ticket more than 6 months before you travel and you don't travel or you cancel, it's possible that the ticket won't be worth anything or that you would only have a couple weeks. Now, that's not a couple weeks to buy another ticket. It's a couple weeks to actually buy the ticket and fly. So know that the refund rules on Southwest cheapest fares have changed dramatically. So if you are going to buy a cheap fare on Southwest now, do your homework, read those rules, so you don't get, if you cancel your ticket, you don't get stuck with an unusable refund.